Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network. The Smithsonian Institution's National Museum of American History has designated April this month as Jazz Appreciation Month. We're going to appreciate and learn about jazz and listen to a whole lot of jazz this hour of our program. What you're listening to now is Honeysuckle Rose, performed by Django Reinhardt. Our person who will guide us through this hour is Bob Parlocha. He's an American jazz expert. He is host of Jazz with Bob Parlocha, which you hear on our News and Classical Information Network. It's a nationally syndicated evening jazz show. And Bob has been interested in jazz for a long time. He was born and reared in California and learned about jazz from his mother's Count Basie and Duke Ellington records. He grew up listening to jazz. He is a jazz performer himself and articulate spokesperson for jazz, astute analyst of the music scene, and he has been master of ceremonies for many jazz concerts in many, many places. We'll be welcoming phone calls. We are going to play a lot of jazz, and you may have a favorite. We can dig up and play some of your favorites and talk about why you are thinking that a certain performer is really, really good. What is it about that performer? There are so many different styles of jazz. We hope to go through many styles as well. Our phone number for you to join us for jazz appreciation is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. And our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Bob, hello. Thank you very much for being with us.
Good morning, Kathleen.
Morning, Bob.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. I'm very good.
Good. So you grew up listening to your mom's Count Basie and Duke Ellington records, and that was it? You found your lifelong love, right?
Yes, I did. She was quite a jazz fan, and my older sisters were into jitterbugging, so I had quite a cross-section of jazz music with Nat Cole, Oscar Peterson, and Louis Jordan and stuff like that. And I got to hear it quietly in the corner. I sat in the corner as a quiet kid, but I was absorbing as much of that as I could.
When did you start playing, Bob, and how did you pick your instrument?
I started playing at age 12. A friend of mine played the saxophone, and I envied him. My parents couldn't afford one for a while, but when they finally did, I got an alto saxophone, and it's been the love of my life ever since.
Mm-hmm. We always hear dire assessments of certain forms of music, be it classical music or jazz, that audiences for both genres are not as great as they used to be. Do you agree with that assessment, or is there an audience out there that's growing for jazz?
Well, when I started this program, I was quite leery, but and now we're in the area of 240 stations, so I think there's quite an audience for jazz out there.
Uh-huh. 240, that's great.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Let's do some historical analysis here of jazz. When did we start hearing jazz, and why did we start hearing jazz in this country where it originated?
Why did we start hearing it?
Yeah.
I think that it's like a juggernaut. You can't keep it inside. The people that are moved by it have to do it. It's a compulsion to do it. And once you hear it, if it's your kind of thing, it grabs you and it becomes part of your lifestyle. Now, some people aren't moved by it at all. That's okay. They've got something else that moves them. But this music will grab some people and hold them for a lifetime. And that's what it's done to me and hopefully a lot of other people.
How do you know you're hearing it?
You feel it. It's mostly feel it. There's an intellectual analysis, I guess, that you could put to it, but it seems pointless. If you feel it, you're way ahead of the game.
And how do you know it's jazz, Bob?
I'm not sure you do. There are things I say in my show is mainstream jazz, but then I will drift from it. My tastes are eclectic. I'm a great Frank Sinatra fan. Is he jazz? Well, that's debatable. But there are other singers and players that I like very much that may or may not be jazz. I don't really care. I call it jazz because it's a frame of reference for most of what I do.
Mm-hmm. And you have a radio show, so you can, if you call it jazz, it's jazz, right, Buck?
Yes. Well, and we in radio and media are lucky in some ways that we define reality for people. It's quite a power. Hope we don't abuse it, but we can do that.
Mm-hmm. So you say your taste is all over. Tell me some of the people you listen to over and over again. I guess I'm asking your favorites.
You mean in jazz or out of jazz?
In jazz.
Well, of course, my very favorites are the saxophone players. And John Coltrane and Stan Getz are my two favorites of all time.
Mm-hmm.
But I love Miles Davis, Thelonious Monk, Charles Mingus, Wynton Marsalis, Branford Marsalis. I've been listening to him lately, and he might be the greatest saxophone player in the business today. I'm not sure. It's not a thing that I want to, you know, declare. Just listen to him and enjoy it. But those are the people I listen to. I listen to all the young people coming up until I can't listen to them anymore. Maybe I don't like what they do, but I have to open my mind to what the new young people are doing because they're the future of the music.
Right. And what's different between what the young people are doing and what the people who have been around for a while or are no longer with us were doing?
Rhythmically, I think there's something different going on in that they pick up things from pop music. I wouldn't call it rock and roll, but I don't know what to call it, but it's a different rhythm that they're getting off the street that has to do with break dancing and that kind of a thing. It adds a rhythm that's different in jazz. Harmonically, they don't bring very much into it, but that's up to us. Jazz is quite advanced harmonically.
Mm-hmm. All right, we have some of your favorites. Who should we listen to? Who do you want to guide us through first? A sax player.
Let's try John Coltrane.
Okay, John Coltrane. Here he is with Giant Steps. John Coltrane, who was with us from 1926 to 1967. Someone has written that Coltrane was the master of perfectly composed music and also played a very spiritual style of jazz, almost a religious style of jazz. Would you agree with that assessment of him, Bob?
I would 100%, yes. It became a cult in the San Francisco Bay Area. There's a church that considers his music messages from God himself.
Really?
Yes.
And why is he, maybe we pick people too because we play that instrument, but why is it that you said that he was one of your favorites immediately? What about him?
Well, harmonically, that tune, Giant Steps, everybody, ran to the piano trying to figure out, what is he doing? Those chord changes were very, very different. He had such skill in playing the horn that he was described as as if he was trying to blow the horn apart. I have a poster that an artist drew John playing and the keys flying off of it. It's one of my favorite Coltrane posters. He changed a lot of the world. He opened doors that we haven't caught up with yet. That's what I consider it my job, to try to help people to catch up. I kind of feel like jazz was advancing and then rock and roll came along and stole the spotlight. It was more primitive and more basic. And jazz went too far with Coltrane and several other people in the 60s so fast that it could not be absorbed by the public. So I want to bring everybody back.
Mm-hmm.
We'll go through it again and see how much we can absorb of it.
Mm-hmm. Is the saxophone hard to play, Bob?
It is for me. Yes, I'm told it's difficult to play. It has so many approaches. I don't know what we're going to play next, but if we play Stan Getz next, you'll see the very large differences in just the sound that a person can get from the horn. It's quite different than Coltrane. And not any less valid to me.
Let's listen to Stan Getz, Quiet Nights.
And a window that looks out on Corcovado, oh, how lovely.
It's such a completely different sound, isn't it, Bob?
Yes, it is. Yes. Yet, they're exactly the same horns. They're both made by Selmer. They're both Selmer Mark VIs. Different mouthpieces, different reeds.
Mm-hmm.
That determines a lot of the sound. But I think it's the emotion that you put into it, what you're trying to sound like, is the point. While Coltrane, to me, is the most powerful player ever, I sound like Getz. And that's the sound that I wanted, I apparently wanted.
Nothing wrong with that, sir.
I loved it. Yeah. I still love it.
Let's go to some phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655. It's Jazz Appreciation Month, and we're doing just that this hour of the program. Our guest is Bob Parlocha. He's an American jazz expert. He's a sax player, and he's host of Jazz with Bob Parlocha, a nationally syndicated evening jazz show, which, as he now said, is on 240, good for him, stations all over the country. Craig in Pewaukee is our first caller. Hi, Craig.
Hi, how you doing?
Fine, how are you?
Okay. Hey, I was going to mention my favorite jazz artist, but afterwards, if it's possible, I'd also like to mention an entertaining jazz story that a friend told to me.
Of course. You want to start with the story?
Okay, sure. Before he passed away, I was friends with Sid Weiss, who used to play with the big bands like Benny Goodman and Artie Shaw.
Mm-hmm.
And Sid told a story about how... I think it was probably during the Depression era or maybe the war. I believe he was a clarinet player. Well, he must have been, because he received a box of real reeds at the time, which were he said were hard to come by, and that everybody was using plastic reeds. I don't know why exactly they were hard to come by, but maybe the area of the world that they had to come from or whatever. But he had a whole box of reeds, and he said, and he was playing for Benny Goodman at the time, and Goodman came up, saw the box of reeds, and took one of the reeds from the box, put it in, didn't like it, took it out, cracked it in half and threw it on the floor, and went through pretty much the whole box doing that until he finally found one that he liked. And Sid just said that Benny just didn't think twice about it. And so, I did want to mention my favorite jazz artist is Art Tatum,
mm-hmm.
especially the from the complete Pablo group masterpiece recordings when he plays with Lionel Hampton and Buddy Rich.
Oh, he could just play like nobody I've ever heard play the piano. He's amazing. Yeah. Piano is my instrument.
And I kind of think that one of the reasons I like him so much is because my background is in math.
Ah.
And I think there's a real tie-in to that somehow.
Right. Let's listen to some Art Tatum. He's worth listening to. And I think he's not as well known as some of the other jazz performers. This is Yesterday's. Art Tatum and Yesterday's. How could that possibly be one person playing the piano, Bob?
Well, it's curious that you should say that. I was just thinking, Red Garland, who was Miles Davis's piano player for some time, talked about the first time he heard Art Tatum. He was positive that he was listening to at least two piano players.
Mm-hmm. When did he perform? We tend not to remember him very much. Is it because he played a long time ago?
Yeah. Jazz programmers have a tendency to want to focus on the here and now, and that's understanding, but the heritage of it all is very important, and we don't want to get into producing radio shows where we have these intellectual historical ghettos. I think when we program, we can blend it all in the space of an hour. We can run from 40s to now and get it in cleanly. It would make more sense if we did it that way. Mm-hmm. So I think they neglect them just because the recordings are not as,
yes,
as clear as modern recordings. And there may be too much piano player going on there, because it's a lot of stuff to absorb in a five-minute track with Art Tatum.
Mm-hmm. You have to have, do you, a big element, or how big an element of improvisation for it to be jazz, Bob?
I don't think that there's any quota. To me, it has to be improvisation if it's jazz.
Mm-hmm.
Although there is jazz writing, and it's clearly jazz, it's the feel, the syncopation of it all, but the essence of it all is improvisation.
Let's go to Muhammad next in Madison. Hi, Muhammad.
Hi. Yes, I've been a jazz fan since the 60s when I was a teenager, and back then there were such nice venues not only to go and see jazz music played, but on the radio, one guy, Ron Kuzner, the late Ron Kuzner in Milwaukee, was an excellent resource. But there used to also be a radio station out of Rochester, New York, that would come on at midnight on the AM band, Idus Against the Night. And some of the most memorable music of that time I heard, like this one song by an album by John Coltrane called Olay, which is like classic music. Another one by Milt Jackson, Sunflower. So there's not enough of that around. I don't even know, other than a short, few hours here in Madison where you can actually tune into a radio station and listen to jazz all the time like you used to.
Well, let me just say, to promo ourselves, because why not, on Friday nights between 9 and 1 and Saturday nights between 10 p.m. and 1 a.m., most of our classical network stations do carry jazz with Bob, and so we're happy to say that. Are there other venues for being able to hear jazz? Are there clubs in the country? Are they accessible to a lot of people, Bob?
Not as many as we would like, that's for sure. And they, economically, it's a tough road to hoe. It's very expensive now. in San Francisco to go out and see jazz is going to cost you a pretty penny.
Really? Yeah. What? Why?
I'm not sure why. I mean, the overhead is... you're in San Francisco, first of all.
Yeah.
The overhead's going to be very high. The Jazz Center kind of in the Bay Area sort of moved out of San Francisco across the Bay to Oakland, where things are cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a few more clubs in the East Bay now than in the city. But it's club ownering is a tough business. It always has been. And I don't see any other way around it.
Mm-hmm. One of the goals of the Smithsonian Jazz Appreciation Month is really to get students interested in jazz, have jazz bands in high schools throughout the country, get young people to play jazz when they're very, very young. What about schools' involvement with jazz? Are there a lot of jazz bands? Are students studying jazz and listening to jazz in schools around the country?
Not enough, but... In some places, there are pockets of it where it's growing. It depends on teachers. And, you know, I recently, the last teacher that taught me died recently on last Saturday.
Oh.
And he was 92. He is a man that, when I first met him, the first day he walked in, he sat down at the piano and he played the blues.
Hmm.
Now, music teachers played marches. They played symphonic pieces. Very seldom did anybody come in and sit down and play the blues. But this guy did, and he got us all wrapped up in jazz music. And it's a rare thing to find teachers that do that in schools that want to go along with it. But if you find it, it worked out beautiful. And I'm very fortunate that I went to Vallejo High School and Junior High School in Vallejo, California, where the teachers were magnificent.
It really makes a difference. I know in Wisconsin there are a lot of high schools that have jazz bands, and I've gone to some of their competitions over the years, and these bands can be just fabulous, and you know that the young people are going to have an appreciation of jazz and hopefully play jazz for a good portion of their lives. Once you get it when you're in school, it stays with you, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. It does. If it's your thing, you can't shake it. It follows you forever.
Yeah. You mentioned the blues. Let's play some Miles Davis. We have Miles Davis because the title of this is appropriately All Blues. Miles Davis. Considered one of the central figures of jazz in the 20th century, Mr. Miles Davis. That song is All Blues. We are celebrating Jazz Appreciation Month and having a wonderful time doing so. Our guest this hour of the program, you can hear on our Classical Music Network on Fridays and on Saturdays, Jazz with Bob Parlocha. And he is joining us this morning by phone from the West Coast, from San Francisco. He is also a jazz musician, and he MCs a number of jazz concerts in various places. Learned about jazz from his mom's Count Basie and Duke Ellington recordings. Our phone number for you to join this conversation is 800-486-8655. You can always leave messages on our Facebook page if you would do that, your favorite jazz. We'd love to read that, and we can mention that on the air. That's the Kathleen Dunn Show, or our email is talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. pianist, composer, and big band leader Duke Ellington, who many have said is responsible for making jazz an art form similar to classical music. Did he do that, Bob? That's a big thing to do in life.
Yeah, he's Ellington, and that's the same as Beethoven.
And he played lots of different kinds of music. He played gospel and blues and played classical music as well, soundtracks.
The whole spectrum of music, not just jazz, melt in the Ellington Band with a rhythm section that makes it jazzy, but it's everything.
Yeah, I could just listen to that all day. I'd love that. He was a genius. Let's go to more phone calls. John in La Crosse is next. Hi, John.
Yes, great show.
Thanks.
And I wanted to ask about another piano player, George Gershwin.
Yes.
And he was another genius who was able to pull together different genres and was, I think, one of the key people that helped to make the transition from, shall we say, the jamming in our nightclubs and so forth into the symphony hall.
Bob.
And just a few comments on
yes.
Gershwin.
Oh, of course. Yeah, we could. Gershwin. I love Gershwin. Bob?
I have no argument with that. Yeah, that's quite true. He did bring American popular music to a place where it wasn't before, and jazz went along with it. You listen to what he writes, it's very jazzy stuff. The relationship between the Jewish immigrant and the black Americans, there was a lot going on that came out in the jazz idiom and was evolved into what we know now.
Mm-hmm. We'll find
American music.
We'll find a little Gershwin and play it along the way. He also certainly popularized a lot of jazz, didn't he? People were walking around whistling or singing Gershwin tunes.
Yes, yes. There's a thing in jazz where, you know, it's almost as if you're a better person if you can get some classical into the jazz. I'm not sure about that. I mean, I find that jazz musicians play in their instruments better than classical musicians because they know how to improvise, and that's the key. That's the hard thing.
Yeah.
But anything that's added to the mix becomes the American mix. That's what we are. We're the melting pot.
And tell me about, maybe this is one of those things that you can't really explain what it is, but try anyhow. Help me out here. How do you improvise? What are you listening to?
The chord changes.
Uh-huh.
Every tune has a set of chord changes, and the melody is built on that. What you do is in improvisation is essentially compose a new melody.
Hmm. And you're doing that just on the spot?
On the spot.
Isn't that
That's
something?
That's what I say. That's tough.
It is tough. It's really tough. Let's go to Evan. John, thanks for your call. Evan in Madison next. Hi, Evan.
Hey, thank you very much for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I'm calling because I just wanted to say a couple things about how to kind of make jazz a part of your kids', you know, musical diet as they're growing up. One thing that was really effective for me was that when I was just a little boy, I was one of these kids that listened to music every night as he was going to sleep, and that was kind of my father's doing. But he kind of slowly started to sort of feed me this music that was all, you know, conducive to sleeping, of course, but one of the albums was Kind of Blue, which is the album that the track you played earlier, All Blues, came off of. And you know, when a kid is going to sleep, there's something that happens. They just start sucking that up. And I didn't turn into a jazz musician, But I know that as a result of having the music introduced to me just as a boy, I mean, it really has, you know, it's followed me throughout my life. And I still get a lot of joy from hearing it and going to see it live. And I'm a drummer. And as I said, you know, I'm not a jazz musician. But as I got into that music and I tried to play it, even though I never became, you know, all that fluent with it, it teaches you some things about sensitivity and listening to the people that you're playing with,
right?
And sort of, you know, responding to other people, and you know, even if you've got a kid that's just wants to rock, you know, that's awesome, but it's really good to just kind of nudge them a little bit towards jazz to kind of, you know, teach them how to be a more sensitive player.
Oh, I love it. Yeah.
And that's, I think that's all I have to say. So again, thanks for the great show.
Very well said, Evan. Thank you. I like what he said about responding to other people, because that is what happens, and you can see it. You can hear it when you hear good jazz, but you can also see it on the faces of people who are playing jazz, that it must be a wonderful experience to be able to respond to other human beings on such a level, Bob.
It is. It's quite exciting. And that's what goes on in the quintet. People are not saying, this is my part and that's your part, da-da-da-da-da. When a guy is soloing, the rhythm section may be doing something that they've never done before, and they just evolved into it, and it's happening right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lovely thing to have happen.
Let's play somebody else who I think really did popularize jazz and died recently, and we're all familiar with this tune, but his influence, I think, was widespread, and another generation started appreciating jazz because of Dave Brubeck. Dave Brubeck and Take Five. Bob Parlocha is our guest this hour to guide us through jazz. You know, everybody who's hearing that right now knows that song and can whistle along with it or hum along with it. He really brought, I think, jazz music to the mainstream, don't you think, Bob?
Yes, he did. He did. He was one of the people who brought it to the mainstream, but a very select audience. And there's something about Paul Desmond, you know, that confuses me. I don't understand why there are not more players influenced by Paul Desmond. He plays like no one else plays.
Mm-hmm.
No one does that.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Stan Getz and he were close together, but those are different instruments. Why doesn't anybody channel Paul Desmond? I don't know. That's a lovely sound. One of the prettiest sounds I've ever heard is his tone.
Mm-hmm. It is.
His
it's beautiful.
His ideas that were different than other people.
Right.
I'm trying to get into a thing where I feature a lot of Desmond in different settings. I'm trying to carry his cause to the people.
How do you decide what you're going to play each week? Do you do periods in history? Do you mix it up?
It's what I feel at the moment. My show is completely spontaneous. When I start, I do a six-hour show. When I start, I pick one tune, and that's it. And I go from there.
So you improvise?
Yeah. I never know what's next.
Hmm.
Until the tune is playing, and then I figure out what to follow it.
Let's go to Matt in Milwaukee next. Hello, Matt.
Hi. Thanks for the great show.
Thanks for calling, Matt.
Okay. The reason why I'm calling is Jazz never really was a big part of my life. My sister used to play clarinet, so I was kind of brought up on Gershwin a little bit, but in the early 90s, I started getting into bands like Korn and Deftones and stuff like that. But I got a disc in the mail of Miles Davis. And after hearing that disc once, I don't know if I can really put this right, but it was some of the happiest music that I could think of. It was deep and, moving. And being a guitarist myself, as far as being a musician, it really kind of affected the way I did things. I found a guitar teacher who, it was funny, he just played Take Five, who was teaching me how to play that on the guitar, and I didn't even know who it was or even knew the song until after I already learned half of it. But just, I can't believe how much jazz can really affect the way that you, I guess call and response is probably the best way to describe it, to work with other musicians. And that's really all I got to say. So
thank you.
Out there, yeah, but thank you.
Thanks. Thanks for the call. Bob?
Yes.
What do you think of what he had to say?
I couldn't make out all of it, but I wonder why people, they like jazz, but then they sort of drift away from it. Why does that happen? And I've never drifted away from it. I never dreamed of drifting away. And I don't know why. Since it moves you, why aren't you listening to it all the time? It may be that it's too complicated, maybe. I don't know. But that's a question I'd like to explore. And it's good that people, you don't have to be a jazz musician. Playing an instrument is so much fun. It's such a release. It feels so good. Everybody should play an instrument if they can. I mean, there are some people who can't do it, but if we can play two tunes on a guitar, hey, you're doing good. That's good.
I think it's a great thing, too, also just to escape the world. It's amazing how if you play something, even if you don't play it very well, and you just nobody else hears what it is you're playing, that for yourself, you can just drift away, can't you? You just drift away.
Now, yes, you don't have to play very well.
Mm-hmm.
Just play for you.
Right. Let's go to Mike in Woodruff. Hello, Mike.
Good morning, Kathleen and Bob. Thank you for taking my call. I love this program, as I always do love your program, Kathleen.
Yes, ma'am.
My question is, I aspire as well to sound like Stan Getz, Paul, Desmond, Phil Woods, and probably like what you sound like, Bob. And I'd like to know, do you have any tips as to a kind of reed or a kind of mouthpiece that I could investigate that might point me more in that direction? I've right now, I just can't quite get the sound, and I'd love to find out how.
Well, a story. When I met Stan Getz, he had listened to me on the radio, and we had never met. And then he said, "Everybody says you sound like me," and I said, "Yes, I do." And he said, he handed me his horn, and he said, "Well, let's hear it." This is Stan Getz handing me his horn. And the curious thing, it's the same horn that I have. But when I opened this case up, I was working as a taping a show, so I didn't have a horn. So I opened this case up, and the mouthpiece was the same mouthpiece that I play with, and the reed was the same mouthpiece, the reed that I play with. Now, those are the two keys to getting that sound. The mouthpiece is made by Brillhart, and it's a Brillhart 5-star. Now, finding anybody who makes them, they don't make them anymore, but there are knockoffs of them that are pretty good. And I have a couple of them that I found, and I used the Lavaz medium hard reed, which is the same reed that Stan played with. Now, there's a problem with that in that someone who's asking about reeds and Benny Goodman. Reeds, the quality of bamboo has to be very high. And the Chinese are giving the pandas most of the good bamboo.
They need to save them for you. We've been talking so much about Stan Getz.
I have no objection to that.
Right.
I just I want somebody to come up with some better Mambo songs.
We've been talking a lot about Stan Getz, so let's hear a little Stan Getz. This is actually the way Bob sounds as well, Autumn Leaves. Stan Getz and Autumn Leaves. We're appreciating jazz during this Jazz Appreciation Month this hour on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Benny Goodman and Sing, Sing, Sing. Benny Goodman, of course, another huge jazz performer, big band swing music. And also, he helped advance bebop. I think one of the other things we haven't talked about very much is the role of jazz in racially integrating music groups. Benny Goodman was a strong opposer of Jim Crow laws, promoted racial equality by not touring on the southern states. He was an important influence in popular and jazz music, as well as a very prominent civil rights activist. And I think we should talk about that for a moment, Bob, because there is a racial equality component to jazz that was, you know, in some ways ahead of its time. It was never really ahead of its time. We've had a long history and horrible history with race in this country. But the world of jazz broke some barriers, didn't it?
Yes, it did. Benny Goodman is one of the guys who first integrated the band with Lyle Hampton and Teddy Wilson. Before that time, you just didn't have mixed bands playing certain places, and they weren't all in the South. But Benny began to change that. Norman Granz was a very strong proponent of that with the Philharmonic concerts. And the audience itself, you know, they didn't want to get into that stuff. If you could play, that was the thing. That was the thing.
Right.
And it still is.
Yeah. We have an interesting comment from Marion Shell Lake, who writes, up here in the North Woods, we are very fortunate to have a jazz camp for several weeks that is keeping jazz very much alive. Hundreds of young students come to Shell Lake Arts Center. Jazz is taught, and there are professional jazz musicians. The free faculty concerts are absolutely phenomenal. That's from Marion Shell Lake. That's a nice thing to know about, huh? Go to Shell Lake in Wisconsin. You should come to that, Bob. That'd be fun. You'd like Shell Lake, Wisconsin, sir. You'd do your radio show from there, right?
I can do that.
You could. All right. Yeah. We should try and arrange that. Let's go to Carl in Milwaukee next. Hi, Carl.
Hi. Thanks for this show. Great show. I wanted to share what got me interested in jazz. I was coming home in the car with my dad. I must have been about 11 or 12, and a late-night jazz show in Milwaukee. It was Dr. Stu's radio show on WTMJ radio, and I heard a song. I didn't know who it was by at that time, but I discovered it was by Sonny Rollins, and what he did, it was a song called Wagon Wheels, and when I heard the trio, it was Sonny Rollins on sax and tenor sax and Shelly Mann on drums and Ray Brown on bass, and I thought, if somebody could do that with Wagon Wheels, take a song that's kind of familiar and improvise over 15 minutes and make it totally interesting, that sold me for life. I mean, that's one tune. And by the way, you know, I didn't know that that was an integrated group. I didn't know Sonny Rollins was black, and I didn't know Ray Brown was also African-American, and Shelly Manne being white. And I didn't know what color they were, but I realized it didn't really matter because good jazz is good jazz.
Bob.
Absolutely true. Absolutely true. We don't really, most fans don't care anything about whether something's integrated, unless you're a civil rights worker. Maybe that would change your mind a bit. And the loveliness of integrated groups is great. I mean, Miles Davis's great sextet with the Lemons on piano, that was a lovely thing. And you're right, that trio was a killer. And then the first time I heard that, I had the same reaction that you had. Did you have a reaction the first time you saw the cover?
Oh, I did. I thought it was wonderful because it was kind of ironic. It was called Way Out West, and I thought it had a double meaning. It was like going way out west, but also being way out in terms of improvisational style. So I kind of caught the pun, and I loved it. I also caught the empty holster, and I thought maybe the tenor sax was something he fantasized as kind of replacing something else that usually goes in the holster, a much better thing replacing it.
It remains my very favorite album cover of all time. Sonny holding that 10-gallon hat and that cow's head in the desert. That was something.
Let's play a little bit of it, the wagon wheel. Nice. We are talking about jazz, appreciating jazz during this Jazz Appreciation Month, and our guest, who we're trying to get to, Wisconsin. Do a show from Wisconsin. That would be fun. Bob Parlocha has, you hear him on our classical network on Fridays and on Saturdays, and he does a jazz show, and he's a jazz musician himself. We have time for, well, let's go to one question. We're running short on time. We've been having too good a time here. Larry in Oshkosh, I guess this is true. He wonders what you think of the fact that many more men than women seem to appreciate jazz. Is that true, Bob?
No.
No, all right.
I don't think so. Of course, I made my fortune in radio doing a show called Dinner Jazz. And it was a very romantic show, and women went crazy for it. And my women humes are great. So. And when you go to a club, you know, I don't think there's more men than women. I think it's pretty even.
Well, I think you should come to Wisconsin. I think we should make that happen. And, Bob, thank you very, very much for being with us this hour. It was great. It just flew on by, sir.
Went faster than I thought. I really enjoyed it.
I did, too.
Thank you for asking me.
Our great pleasure.
And thank you very much for carrying my show and carrying the shows that you carry. Everything has to be better than television.
I'm with you. And we're better than most radio, too. So there you go. Bob Parlocha, our guest this hour, American jazz expert, host of Jazz with Bob Parlocha, nationally syndicated evening jazz show. You hear it on our news and classical network. Thanks to a number of people for this program, Amanda Magnus, Rhonda Fanning, and Katie Mattson, putting together all the music and the guest. We have to end with some jazz, and when you think of jazz, you frequently think of the Bird, Charlie Parker, pioneering jazz alto saxophone player. Here's Charlie Parker.